host today is Jerry Bergson. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, John. Good morning, everybody.
And it's a pleasure having you here. This is Jerry's first time being co-host, and we're both looking forward to it. Before we go any further, I just want to bring to everybody's attention what Project Independence is for any new listener, and it's the Town of North Hempstead's initiative to help seniors age in place. And we provide transportation to medical visits, for shopping, social work services, light work around the house, volunteers for everything. If you have a request, call 311, and if we don't already have that in our file of things we do within the Town of North Hempstead, we go out and try to partner up with somebody. That's the benefit of Project Independence. And, of course, this radio program is a result of that, which is tremendous. We're going to go to our first guest, and I didn't realize this until I read the information. November is National Diabetes Month. And that is a situation. Recently, I've learned about it with different friends of mine, type 1 and type 2, but that's not for me to talk about. We have Dr. Michael Levine with us. Are you on the phone, Doctor?
I am here. Thank you, John.
Oh, terrific. Thank you very much for participating today. Welcome to the show. Jerry, can you hear, Doctor? A little louder for Jerry? Okay, terrific. We just have to get that organized, Doctor. Hello?
I'm here.
Great. We just need the volume to go up a little bit. Tell us, we're going to start the show off with the importance of people watching out for diabetes. I have heard over the years so many people, as they've aged, become diabetic, which I realize can be avoided.
Yeah, by way of background, John, just so the listeners can understand the prevalence of this disease, about 30 million people in the country of about 300 million have diabetes. That's about 10% of the population. So in terms of disease incidence, it's a very, very, very prevalent disease that we see commonly. And what's interesting, that of those 30 million, 10 million don't even know they have it.
Wow.
So only about 20 million people are being treated.
Now, of that 20 million, and I'm not putting the blame on anybody, isn't it, there's a certain percentage that got it due to neglect versus born with it?
That's true. To simplify it, there are two types of diabetes. Type 1, which is basically your body doesn't make the insulin to process the sugar, and that's something we see more commonly presenting in childhood with juvenile diabetes. And then type 2, which really speaks to the neglect that you're talking about, where if people put on weight, they can develop what's called insulin resistance. So even though their body makes insulin, because of the way their body has changed, they no longer can use the insulin to process the sugar.
Okay, now, I'm heavy. I don't have diabetes. My sugar is good. But how does being heavy cause that?
It's just a mechanism that happens within the body that as you put on the weight, the body becomes more resistant to the function of the insulin. It's all receptor-based. So basically, your body has to have insulin receptors at the cellular level.
Okay.
So the weight affects the way those receptors function.
Okay, so I'm just common sense, obviously. Somebody with excess weight should get it off, especially as they age.
Absolutely, for many reasons.
Right, okay. Another question I have is in reference to sugars. Now, I know sugar is the main cause, not the main cause, I shouldn't say that, but is an issue.
Correct.
But there's good sugar and bad sugar.
Right, that is true. So when we talk about good sugar and bad sugar, we're basically talking about the kind of carbohydrate it is. So most of us have heard, try not to eat foods or at least carbohydrates. And carbohydrates, by the way, is a sugar. There's simple carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates. The simple carbohydrates, in general, for our listeners, are basically come in the form of anything that's white. White bread, white rice. Those are the sugars that are simple, that the body breaks down rapidly. Whereas complex carbohydrates come in the whole wheat forms, which is why we hear about eating multigrain bread or brown rice. And it basically gets broken down slower. So it causes less severe spikes in our blood sugar.
Oh, okay. I get it. I'm thinking the quicker it breaks down, the quicker it gets out of your system.
Well, it does.
But remember, it's the reverse. It gives you a shock.
That's exactly right. So if you eat a big bolus, if you have a large, let's say, bowl of white pasta,
right,
for instance, what's going to happen is your blood sugar is going to go way up quickly, and as a response, your sugar level is going to go way up. And to take care of that big carbohydrate load, and then once the sugar level goes up, the carbohydrates get processed, and your blood sugar level goes way down. And what happens when your blood sugar goes way down? You get hungry, and you look for more food. So you have this seesawing of blood sugar, which doesn't really give you a good fluctuation or a good variance in your hunger trends. So you're always better off having a steady state release of energy into your body, and that typically comes in the forms of more complex carbohydrates, which are in the whole wheats and the multigrain carbohydrates.
Okay. Jerry?
Dr. Levin, tell us about A1C.
Right. So the hemoglobin A1C is a function of blood sugar control, and it's a very, very important blood, we'll call it a blood marker for the purposes of the show, that we use to follow someone's sugar control, because it doesn't lie. It really gives you a snapshot of what's happening historically in the patient. So if a patient walks into your office, as if you're treating them for diabetes, and their blood sugar happens to be 80 or 90, which is good, but the hemoglobin A1C is very high, you know that they haven't been keeping their blood sugar tight and in control. So it serves as a very important marker to give the doctor a sense of how the patient's doing over time.
What about those measurements, specifically the arithmetic, 7 and 6 and 5.7? What?
Right. So those, there's a normal range somewhere around 6 to 7 is normal. You want to see it no higher than that. But when it starts creeping up, you know that the patient hasn't been controlling their blood sugar over a period of time tight enough. And that's when you may want to start making some dietary adjustments or some medication adjustments.
What does it mean when the doctor tells you as the patient that you're a pre-diabetic?
Right.
What
well,
does that
basically
mean?
Means that you're starting to have the bodily either the resistance to the insulin or the decrease in the ability to process the insulin at the receptor level. So these are the people who we really want to be vigilant with, keeping weight off and avoiding anything that may be that predispose you to the diabetes, such as a sedentary lifestyle, being on the wrong diet, having excessive stress levels. You know, these are the soft indicators that could certainly affect, especially people on the fringes, whether or not they're going to progress to diabetes or not. So that's why it's always important to, again, keep your weight down, have a reasonable diet that doesn't have a lot of simple sugars, have regular exercise, drink enough fluid, keep the stress down, especially for the people who are showing early signs of pre-diabetes.
In the diet, doctor, meals, I mean, you hear sometimes, I mean, somebody has two or three big meals, you have six smaller meals. Is that an issue in diabetes? Should it be like every 3 hours you eat something, you hear these different kinds of diets?
Yeah, you're always better off having smaller meals more frequently than big meals less frequently. And for a couple of reasons. One is, you have a big meal, what does it do? It makes you really tired. It promotes that sedentary lifestyle where you want to nap. So, you know, I see it in my office sometimes where I see what some of the people who work for me are eating, and I know that in about an hour they're going to be sleeping at their desk. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is not a really smart choice.
No, you're thinking, I'm paying you.
Exactly. But I really believe that you are what you eat. And from a diabetic standpoint, you're better off having, again, foods with more complex sugars, low sugar, less fat. And again, the reasons there are obvious. We don't need to get into that.
No, I agree there.
And you know, high vitamins. And I really think that most people could function as an effective nutritionist for somebody else, but getting themselves to eat the right things because of cravings, because of stress, because of what's around you that you can easily grab, individually, we typically reach for the wrong food.
You know, that was just a great thing you said, because it's so true. Everybody could tell somebody else what they should and shouldn't be eating. But when
Absolutely.
They go home, they're eating it.
Of course. Of course. And look, you know, it's really the culture that we live in. Just turn on the television. You know, we from a very young age, we're teaching our children to eat a lot of the wrong foods because we're marketing to them. And now with all the kids running around with handheld devices, and we know how, you know, Facebook and what they're looking at has been wildly successful in their marketing campaigns, you know, it's beyond what we can do as parents or what we can, you know, do and recommend to other people as physicians, because people are really getting their information to a much larger degree from advertisers, and that's a problem.
Right, I agree. I mean, actually, I've on occasion taken my grandkids to school, dropped them off at the preschool, and it's amazing what some of these kids are walking in with, and this is a negative, with these little boxes of Fruit Loops, and I'm saying, it's a five-year-old.
Right.
You shouldn't be teaching them to walk in with one of these little carry boxes of Count Dracula or something. It's all sugar.
I agree, but, you know, that's, you know, again, that's the training that starts early. We tend to eat what we like. You know, kids love sugar.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they don't reach for the vegetables first, but... You know, if you train them that this is what you eat, this is what is good, this is what's good for you, I think eventually it sets in. But certainly, if you're going to give them the Fruit Loops and the Count Dracula, you're training them to like what's sugary, and,
right.
and that's going to become their baseline.
I'm going to give a plug to my daughter. I have three, but my oldest one has two kids. These boys eat like you couldn't believe. So the other day when she was going shopping, what would you like as a treat? He wanted grapes and lentils.
Oh, that's unusual. Good for him.
How about that?
Good for him.
Doc, there's a whole psychological element here, of course, that I'd like you to comment on, meaning that we may be told by our doctor that you're pre-diabetic and you're really approaching the diabetic level. This is what you have to do. And a lot of patients don't usually do that, right? They find ways to avoid it. So there's a counseling element here that I think has to take place, right?
I agree. And, you know, look, we're, as medical providers, we're all overworked, and we don't have as much time as we wish we had for our patients. But I strongly recommend that anyone who's told that they're pre-diabetic or exhibits the family history or risk factors to lead to pre-diabetes and diabetes get help. You know, it goes back to what I said before, that we all know what to eat and what not to eat, but we also know that it's very difficult to make behavioral changes without support. And that's why support groups work. That's why Weight Watchers has been wildly successful. It's the only diet plan that's been around for 50 years. Everything else comes and goes. Why? Because they require you to come in, be checked, and be accountable to somebody else other than yourself. So that psychological component that you mentioned is very real. But there are ways around it if we get the right support to change behavior.
Right.
Thank you.
What we're going to do is take an early break. We're talking with Dr. Michael Levine in reference to diabetes, preventing it, and things to do if you have it. We'll be right back. You're listening to 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.